Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Monday Night Radio. Monday night is your night to talk with the experts. Call us now to get into the queue at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Call us.
Well, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. That was very odd and an unfortunate glitch, for which I apologize. As you know, we were having some trouble with our promo starting up, and apparently now we're overcompensating for it. So I hope you enjoyed hearing it two or three times. And that's even stranger. All right, we're going to have to try and work with this. It seems like our recording equipment is recording and playing back instantly. So if you're hearing that, we're working on it, and I apologize very, very much. Okay, well, I'm just going to keep talking, and maybe it won't keep going as long as I keep talking, although that's, again, I apologize. If you people out there could somehow send us a message, let us know what you're hearing, I'd really appreciate it. This certainly has never happened before, and all right, everybody, I'm just going to ask you to please hold on a minute while we work this out. And Dr. Williams, who is our guest, who is there waiting very patiently, I apologize to you as well. And please just give us a couple of minutes. Okay, we're going to see if that's any better, and I appreciate the feedback. And we're back on the air, so let's see if this works. Apparently, most of you can't hear what I was hearing, and so I'm very grateful for that, and perhaps I'm just lucky. In any event, we have a wonderful show tonight. We have with us Dr. Joseph Williams. He is the author of Who Do You See in the Mirror? And as you travel over the holidays, ask yourself, what does what I put in my luggage and how I pack it say about me? Is there more baggage in your baggage than you may realize? What does your mate's choice of luggage say about their baggage? Why do some of us overpack while others always end up having to borrow or buy essentials once they arrive? Now, this week's guest expert, Dr. Joseph Williams, not only has a PhD in applied management and decision science and an MBA in organizational behavior, but he also spent 7 years in the trenches working as an airline baggage handler. So when you put that all together, Dr. Williams is uniquely qualified to explain to us what the baggage in our baggage says about us. Now, of course, that's not really what his area of expertise, I mean, that is an area of expertise he has, but that's not his focus now. What his actual focus now is talking about irresponsible behavior in the workplace and how to bring about organizational responsibility and accountability. But because he has this unique background where he is an expert in organizational behavior and in decision science and also has spent all this time working in the airlines, in the baggage area and observing people, and he clearly is quite a student of human nature, we asked Dr. Williams to come on and to talk a bit about what he saw out in the trenches. I'm going to try and one more time figure out what's going on this end before we bring Dr. Williams on, because even though you can't hear it, the system seems to be repeating everything I say into my headset, which means I can't hear anything else, and I won't be able to hear Dr. Williams. So Dr. Williams, hold on one more moment, please, while we try to figure out back here what is going on with our recording system, which has gone haywire.
Hi, this is Gail Rubin, author of A Good Goodbye, Funeral Planning for Those Who Don't Plan to Die, and the Family Plot blog. Was on the program and just wanted to let you know that your listeners are awesome. It was a great conversation, and I very much appreciate you having me on the program. Best wishes for your continued success. Hi, this is Gail Rubin, author of A Good
And I'm back, and we still seem to be having this problem. So, one more time.
One more time.
Okay, I think I'm back. And again, I am so very, 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 very sorry, especially to our guests and our callers. Please, please accept our apologies. And things seem to be working now. Okay, without further ado, let's bring Dr. Williams on. And again, Dr. Williams, I'm so very sorry. Dr. Williams, are you there? I am so very sorry.
Yes.
Thank you
yes,
for
can
being
you hear me?
So. I can hear you. Thank you for being
okay,
so
no
so patient. Thank you very, very much. Dr.
No
Williams, before we start talking about baggage and decision science, well, first of all, I want to hear, what is decision science?
It's actually really based upon facts, really, you know, and you don't have to, you know, you have to, and when you're resolving problems on decision science, you have to know the root cause of it. And it's really a person who has a lot of analytical, like my undergrad degree is in chemistry. So, I know, I had that problem solving set, you know, from the onset of my first degree. But decision science is looking at all the facts, setting up, you know, brainstorming the ideas, and being able to select the best decision based upon the facts as possible so that you can have complete success. So it's really pretty simple. Yeah, you don't want to do a lot of that gut work or that, you know, shooting from the hip. We call that none science, okay? You just accumulate all the data, put them in, and organize the data and try to set, see where the variables come into trying to resolve a problem and find out which variable is been able to, you identify that's really caused the problem. But it's trying to get to the root cause of the problem and using basic science instead of guesswork. Take the guesswork out.
You said it was very simple, but then why do so many people have such problems making decisions?
Well, believe it or not, that they've had that probably been exposed to that even as a young, you know, when they were young, and the environment that they were around, either they saw that behavior or, you know, and was influenced by it. And then they were able to make some type of decision once they became developed, as they got older, as to what they were going to do in that type of situation. But it starts very young. I mean, very, you know, in terms of decision making. And people just tend to, you know, they do too much thought in trying to determine whether or not they're going to hurt somebody's feelings and that kind of stuff, and they overanalyze things, and really they should just take a simple approach, line up all the facts, get different ideas from other, you know, as many ideas as you possibly can, get the best decisions, best information you possibly can, and digest it analytically and make the decision. And you, and if you do that, you probably won't make too many decisions like we are right now. So that's basically all it is. It's pretty simple to me. I mean, and those people that can't make a decision, that they were probably influenced with some of their upbringing. You know, you are product of your behavior environment. And mm-hmm. you have a choice between two different types of behavior. Behavior comes from two sources. One, it comes from your inherent behavior, which you're born with. Okay, those are your natural instincts. And it comes from learned behavior, which is your external behavior. That's the behavior that you choose to learn. And you watch other people and you, you know, learn from them. So those are only two sources of behavior, period. And you, we as humans have to manage responsibly both of those two behaviors. Like, for instance, let me give you a quick example. Let's say a person want to be, one of the inborn behavior is they want to be loved. They want to be a part of a situation, you know, part of a group. They want to be accepted. Well, what do you go through, to be accepted? Would you, admit something unlawful just to be part of a group to be accepted? Or would you say, hey, look, I'm okay in being part of a group, but I have respect for the law, and you have to be courage enough, let me be brave enough to say, I don't mind being accepted, but I'm not going to break the law. And that's pretty difficult for some people, especially young people. Young people, they tend to go ahead and join that group. And I think that seemed to be the problem. But I did come up with a solution to all of this, and it's called the human capable system, and I was certainly going to mention it tonight.
And we'll certainly get to that. Let me just say you're listening to Monday Night Radio with Dr. Joseph Williams. And if you would like to speak with Dr. Williams, and we will be getting to luggage, I promise you, and it's all going to tie in. The number is 866-MONDAY-6. Or you can email us your comments at comments@mondaynightradio.com. Send us a message by Twitter at Monday Radio. And you can also find us on Facebook at Monday Night Radio. Now, as you mentioned, Dr. Williams, you developed the system, and in fact, the name of your site, Common Sense Management Strategies. So, and I was about to say, this all does sound like common sense, really, to me, and so that's a great name for your management company. And then your book, Who Do You See in the Mirror, which talked about recognizing and changing irresponsible behavior, primarily in the workplace, to bring about organizational responsibility and accountability. And so if you could talk a little bit about that and the other, let me sort of tell our audience how this is going to tie into the whole how do you handle your luggage and that sort of thing.
Right. Okay. When I did my research, it took me 4 years to write this book, okay? And I had 30 years experience in nothing but management for Fortune 500 companies. But I did not have any experience working for, non-management, an hourly blue-collar worker. So when I found out that I was going to write this book and I was able to get my dissertation published in Management Review Journal, which was published in 8 different countries, and it is in all the 1,600 MBA schools across the globe. That's when I indicated that the root cause, when I found it during my research, I found out that, hey, the root cause of all of these systemic problems when things happen, whether or not it was the space shuttle that blew up, or whether it was the BP oil spill, or whether it was the West Virginia coal mine, all of those problems had one common denominator, and the common denominator was the human factor. And that's when I began to delve into trying to find out a formula of how to be able to change that. And I was able to do that by extensive research of looking at what the behavior scientists had in research before I began to do my dissertation. And I found out one important overlook that they made, and that was they didn't isolate the five key elements of human behavior. And that's the reason why I call it the human cable system. CABLE, C-A-B-L-E, is an acronym for C stands for consequence, A stands for attitude, B stands for behavior, L stands for learning, and E stands for environment. If you look at real life, like when I went undercover and was able to observe the behavior, if you take those five elements, most of those are being treated by the relationship between those five have been exclusive of each other. But that's not the correct way to approach it. They are mutually inclusive of each other. So what I did was just formulate those, since the other scientists left them out, and develop the formula saying, a structure saying that your attitude, see, drives your actions, and your actions drives your consequence. Well, actually, when you decide to act, your consequence is automatically part of your action. In other words, your action actually causes a positive or negative consequence. So
the action gets the consequence.
Yeah, it gets the consequence. So, but we were treating them, I mean, the past research was treating them separately. And then the next element, which is learning, that is always a learning when you have a consequence. So
that's very true. That makes perfect sense.
That's right.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and that's what they left out. And so I reformulated and called it the human cable system, and it is the first time in print
on that. And you know, it's interesting because if you have kids, every parent already kind of intuitively knows that, and that's what you hopefully are teaching your kids. But that's not what necessarily is being put out in the organizational management arena. So that's pretty cool that you were able to bring that into the professional environment. Let's talk about when you went when you were working. Are you allowed to say what airline you worked for?
Yeah, absolutely. It was US Air. Well, actually, okay. I started with America West, and America West Airlines got brought out, or not brought out, but they merged with US Air. So yes, US Air was the last airline that I worked for.
All right, and so now go on.
No, go ahead.
So as you know, we have already people lighting up the switchboard, and they're calling in, most of them, with interesting stories about luggage and what has happened to it or didn't happen to it. And so what we wanted to ask you in particular before we bring the call, get to the calls, is in your capacity as someone who was looking at organizational behavior and decision science and how these systems work, can you tell us a little bit about how the airline baggage handling system works or doesn't work? And in particular, are there things that you saw in the background that, I know that you saw things that from an organizational standpoint, from a management standpoint, probably, stood your hair on end. And then you probably saw some things that worked well also. But other things that you saw that the average passenger would never in a million years have guessed would happen that would turn their hair on end if they knew that that's how disorganized their luggage handling was.
Okay, the biggest problem that passengers have in luggage is lost bags. If any airline experienced a lost bag or either a bag that was put on the incorrect flight, that the root cause of that points directly to the human behavior. It was, if I was at work that day, my focus was not on the tag that is on the bag. we had we go through a lot of practice of if you touch a bag, you must read the tag. Somebody did not read that tag correctly with the right city code, because once it comes down to the conveyor belt, down into the bag room, or whether it's unloaded from the bin of a plane that's coming in and stacked on a cart, each one of those bags, and all the airlines now doing, are using barcoding, so they can track where the bag is gone, but a human being actually takes it and put it in the bin. You have almost three chances to catch the incorrect bag. You have it when it comes down to the conveyor belt, a human being touches it and put it on a cart, supposedly the correct cart. Then a human being takes it from the bag room to the flight. Then you have two human beings. You have one human being that's putting it on a conveyor belt going up into the bin, and you have another human being who has a chance to catch that bag from being put on the wrong flight to read the tag. That's the one up in the bin, stacking them in the bin. So if you lost your bag, it was that day I was asleep. I was not focused, one of the two. I lost the bag. So those are some of the things that goes on. And the other thing is that some of the damaged bags, sometimes when they're going up into the conveyor belt from, into the bend of the plane, sometimes they fall off, and that's, again, a machine-human factor, because if you put them on correctly, you should be able to go up into the bin, correctly, and you do get some damage in the bag, besides the conveyor that also caused some damage. The bags that, you have those, go ahead.
I say, so what you're saying is that in the case of lost luggage, it is almost always, if not always, due to human error.
It's 99.9% human error, period.
And that is that. Go on.
Yeah. And there's no other way that a barcode is, and all a barcode is supposed to do is to track it. What was the mistake? Because you are going to be able to track it. If it's supposed to go to New York and it went to California, we will know it's in California, but it should have gone on the other, and that was a human error.
And we actually had one person who wrote in to tell us a story about they were traveling within the states and their luggage got lost, and when they finally got it back, it had a sticker from Vietnam on it. So that luggage
was
pretty far.
Oh, yeah, that is possible. No question about it. It is possible to go that far, and I'd be afraid to even guess how many humans touched that bag. It was a lot of humans touched that bag, so it's not like and that's very, very, very unusual, but they all made the same mistake.
there are other issues as well. And one of the things we want to talk about, we're going to get to some callers now, but one of the things we want to talk about after that is, from the behavioral standpoint, people whose luggage gets lost or whatever the mishap may be with their luggage, how they react. And one of the things that I've sort of observed that I want to touch on again after we take some calls is that, really, you can tell a lot about a traveler by what they pack in their luggage and what, how they react when that luggage goes missing. And it occurred to me that it's almost in a microcosm sort of a sense, not unlike when you ask someone if you knew, if there was a fire in your house and you had to get out, what would you grab? If you're going on a trip and you have to pack, what do you put in there? It's all really interesting from a human behavioral sort of science standpoint. But let's get to some calls. First of all, again, if you'd like to join us and if you have any questions or an interesting story to share with us, the number is 866-MONDAY-6, or you can email us at comments@mondaynightradio.com. You can also send us a message on Twitter at Monday Radio, or find us on Facebook at Monday Night Radio. And now we're going to go to Dan from Santa Barbara, and Dan has some stories, and in addition to that, he has book he's written. So, Dan, good evening. Are you there, Dan?
This is Dan Pointer in Santa Barbara. I'm a passenger. I fly more than 6,000 miles every week, and I recently wrote the Air Travel Handbook, which is available at Amazon. I've picked up a lot of good stories from my own travels and from a lot of other people, and I guess the best one to start off with is, in many times when you get your bags, you find that the officers are walking around with drug-sniffing dogs. Well, they can trace senses. They can sense traces of prohibited items even after they've been removed from your luggage. On a recent trip to Auckland, I was waiting at the conveyor for my suitcase when I was approached by an officer with a drug-sniffing dog. The canine became excited upon encountering my wheeled attaché case. The officer asked if I had any fruit or vegetables in there, because in Australia and New Zealand, they're checking for that too. And I replied that there were two bananas and an apple in the case between Los Angeles and Sydney, but that I had eaten them. I'd consumed them hours ago. He asked me to open the bag. He searched the bag. And, of course, the offending apples and bananas were gone. But the point is that you might have something in there, and it could be an illegal drug. It could be pot or something. But the odor lingers on. They can still detect it. So you want to be very careful, because in some of these countries, if you get caught, the punishment is death, and there's zero tolerance, no excuses. So that's something to remember.
That is one of the things I try to do in giving advice to anybody when they travel. If you have a briefcase or a personal small bag, you want to always keep that bag in your sight. Never let it, because anyone
Absolutely.
Can put something in that bag. And that's what, you know, so traveling during the holiday, actually, you should, not during the holidays, traveling anytime, you should be vigilant in observing your surrounding as well as keeping your bag in your sight. Do not leave it. Just like, you won't believe your young child that way, so you shouldn't leave your bag, because you could end up, actually, somebody could put something in that bag, et cetera, and you could be in a lot of trouble.
Oh, my gosh, they could put a banana or an apple in there.
Well, yeah.
You can just
put papa seeds in there. I tell you what, you can be papa seeds, and papa seeds, if you eat a lot of papa seeds, you may flunk a drug test right there.
And so might your luggage. Yeah, you said you had a couple of stories. What else you got?
Yeah, another one happened to me. I was going through security in Portland, Oregon, and my suitcase was pulled aside for secondary screening. The TSA officer was probably alarmed because I have projector cables and spare batteries and so on. They probably saw those in the X-ray screen. So then they pulled the bag aside, and they swabbed it, the whole thing, including the handle, and they took the little circular piece of cloth and put it in the detection machine. Alarmed, he came back, he swabbed it a second time, then he swabbed it a third time, and then
wow.
he asked me if I'd been on a farm or had I handled explosives. I said, well, no. And I thought about this, and I said, well, you know what happened? The cab driver, he said he told me he had a heart condition, and he was on nitrate medication, and he pulled my bag from the trunk of the taxi, and apparently there were traces of nitrates on his hand. And I spent
That's
the next
right.
20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, filling out TSA forms while they went through everything. So those
yep.
detection machines are very sensitive.
So the guy had taken a medication, and the act of putting it from his hand to his mouth got enough on his hand that when he touched your handle, it left enough of a trace that it set off the detectors.
That's right.
That's wild.
Those things are minute traces. I mean, they are very, like he said, I agree with him. They are so sensitive, it get down to the nanogram or whatever the smallest unit that he is. So
that brings up a really good, and if you could stay on the line for just another moment, Dan, and we want to hear the name of your book again as well, but that is a very interesting study in, you know, how people deal with their luggage and from a behavioral standpoint, because it's almost like he was being accused of something, or his luggage was. His luggage was being accused of something. And you know, there are so many different ways that someone could react. They could get very defensive. They could be in shock. They could cry. They could be belligerent. They could so any number of ways. And so, how did you respond when
it
happened?
You know, as I say, I fly 6,000 miles every week. I'm out of the country 40% of the time. I'm going through immigration customs constantly, and I know I'm okay. So I just relax and see if I can find an explanation and wait till they get over it. But if I were carrying something I wasn't supposed to, I'd feel very guilty. Another thing that I do when I go into Canada, I write right on the form, do you have any fruits or vegetables? And I'll write 5 bananas right on the form. If you don't declare it, then you have lied on an official government form. And I had a time when I went into Australia and I had protein bars, and I knew that protein bars were okay, but I didn't put it on the form. And when I put it through the machine on the way out, they saw the protein bars, opened it up, and I'll tell you, this customs officer read me the riot act, told me how many days in jail that was worth and what that could cost me in Australian dollars. I mean, it was really bad. And I said, but I bring these into Australia all the time. They always say, that's fine. Anything you declare, you have lied on the form.
Yeah, and you really have to be careful about duty-free, you know, duty fees things. When you bring those, you got to check with each airline, not airlines, but each airport to see which one, you know, is okay and which one is not okay. Because you can get, you know, you'll be in a situation where those things will be confiscated too, you know. So you got to be very careful on that as well.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for the
call.
What
about people on the airlines stealing things out of the suitcases?
Well, yeah, that I've observed a couple of times, and that does happen. But I would say it's a very small percentage of them. And here's what blows my mind. I think when that happened, there are cameras in every one of those work areas. How in the world would anybody, that's when I certainly really love my human cable system, because you can see that would be a total disconnect of the consequences when a person, you know, commit that kind of act. Didn't connect the consequences with that and seeing the camel up there, you know, telling the smile, you're on Candy Camel, and we see you, and they still do it. It doesn't deter some of, you know, a small percentage of people to do that. And that one there is, hey, that's just, they just disconnected from the reality of how behavior works, or they just didn't care, one of the two. But that does happen. You know, I have to admit that does happen.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for the call. Tell us again, it's the Air Travel Handbook, and it's available on Amazon, right?
That's right, Air Travel Handbook.
Look it up right now.
Not on general travel, only air travel.
Oh, and look, I see it's available. It's available digitally as well on the Kindle. It's very modern.
It's also an iPhone app. You can get it as an app or as an ebook.
Very cool. So on my iPhone, I can just I don't have an iPhone, but on my iPad, I can just go into the App Store and search for Air Travel Handbook.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Great. You know, before we let you go, would you like to give us your sort of top favorite luggage related tip from your book?
Well, you know, as Dr. Williams pointed out, you watch your bag at all times. And there are cases where flight attendants have gone into bags and stolen things while people are sleeping. So you want to put your really important things like your money, your passport, your medication and so on into a compartment that you can put a little lock on. That's really important.
So a locking compartment in your luggage. That's a really good tip.
Anything of monetary value, those kind of things should never be put into a check bag, period.
Dan, thank you so much for the call.
As I can get.
Okay. Wow, that was some interesting stuff. I mean, to imagine that, I would hope that the bomb-sniffing dogs would be that sensitive, but to have that minute a quantity of the nitrite set things off. That's actually comforting, I think. That's really pretty comforting. Again, this is Monday Night Radio, and our guest is Dr. Joseph Williams, and he is speaking with us about behavioral science as it applies to luggage handling, both on the passenger side and the airline employee side. And let's see, now let's go. We have DeTracy. I hope I'm saying DeTracy's name right. Is that right? Is it DeTracy?
That's great. That's perfect.
Hi, DeTracy. Thank you for hanging in there. I know you've been with us since the beginning when we were having our technical problems, and I appreciate your patience. Thank you so much. Uh-oh. Apparently, we just hit the very end of her patience because DeTracy has left the building. Hopefully, she'll call back in. In the meantime, let's go to Brian. Brian writes about travel. Hi, Brian. Are you there?
I am. How are you?
Hi, Brian. I'm well. You're on the air with Dr. Williams, and thank you, too, for your patience. Again, this has been a very interesting evening technically. What have you got for us?
Well, I have a blog that I started in the fall, and you were talking about how people react to luggage problems. The blog was started because on a Labor Day trip to D.C., my baggage came up destroyed.
Literally,
the bag came out of the carousel, and there were suits and dresses everywhere, and it was followed by a can of shaving cream, followed by a toothbrush, and I got frustrated enough, and it happened several times before, so I decided to start a blog about damaged luggage. So it's on Blogspot, and it's called The Gorilla Ate My Luggage.
The Gorilla Ate My Luggage. Is that a reference to the old Samsonite commercials?
The old American Tourister commercials.
Oh, that's what it is, American Tourister, the one where it's got... Dr. Williams, what accounts for you know, such... I mean, that's a horrible tale that it was just ripped apart like that.
Okay, there are several ways a bag can be damaged. One of the things that I always tell people, if you got baggage that has, you know, a strap or something outside of it, make sure that those, you know, straps are put inside, and because when it comes down to conveyor belt, they'll get caught in that conveyor belt in some sense, and they'll just hang up there, and then all them other bags oncoming bags come and hit it, and that, you know, you can get some damage there. The other, of course, is people not being able to handle bags the way when they take them off the conveyor belt and put them on the cart. And then I've seen some situations where the bag has fallen off the cart and rolled under the wheel of the cart, and the cart just runs over it. You know, yeah. And the third one would be going up a conveyor belt up into the bin, and just about at the top of that bin, it will fall off all the way to the ground, and that's a pretty good height there, and accelerate. So you'll get a damaged bag, you know, in that area. I think those are probably the main areas where I've seen, you know, damaged bag. Except.
Well, now I'm on your site right now, and it's really quite interesting, and I also have to say quite colorful. So, do you have some favorite stories that have been submitted?
I do have some stories. One of the new friends that I made while I was putting this whole blog together was a fellow named Dave Carroll. Dave is a musician who travels around the country, and we talked about accountability earlier. I listened to you talk about that. And if you think about it from the standpoint of the passenger, when you get your damaged luggage, it comes up out of a hole in the ground and you never really know what happened. And the people down below, at least to the passenger, don't have any accountability as to why that happened. That's usually the case. But in Dave Carroll's case, he happened to be sitting on his plane watching his very expensive guitar be thrown around on the tarmac as it was loaded onto the plane. And he got so frustrated that he put together a video that he put on YouTube called United Breaks Guitars. And he wanted to strike back because United wouldn't give him any satisfaction. And he's had over 1 million hits on that video.
Wow.
So did United pay attention then?
Well, they eventually took $3,000 and donated it to a charity of his choice to make up for it. But it took him over a year to get that. And since then, he's published two more videos about it. So he has a set of three. And we have a link
Brian,
to it on our site.
That's pretty, first of all, it's pretty horrifying. And in a moment, I'm going to ask Dr. Williams to talk about, you know, because it sounds like your friend just saw blatant abuse of his luggage, which happened to be his guitar, which was his livelihood. So it didn't even seem like it was an accident, like it just fell off the cart or something, right? You're saying he saw them manhandling the
guitar. Throwing it around. And that's, you know, back in the day when American Tourister selected the gorilla as its trademark, and I used to be their legal counsel, it was picked because that was kind of the epitome of the image of how luggage is handled. It's thrown around by a gorilla. And and that kind of stuck.
You're going to get some, you know, percentage of people that will do that. There's no question about that. But, you know, since I worked with them for 8 years, I also saw just the opposite. I've seen some people that, gee whiz, I treat my bag the same way I want my bag to be treated. And that's the attitude I took. And I said, gee whiz, and when I lose a bag, I don't, you know, I put myself in that feeling. Gee whiz, what would I do if someone loses my bag? So I'm going to put my 100% focus of trying to do two things. Number one, make sure that I don't damage the bag. Secondly, I make sure I put it on the right plane so it can, you know, doesn't get lost, those kinds of things. But what's happening today, though, in human behavior, it's begin to shift more towards the irresponsible part of behavior than the responsible behavior. I mean, today you can't hire, you may have to hire five people to do maybe, you know, two people can probably do what five people have to do today, simply because they're distracted, they're not focused, they're not responsible people. I mean, you know, people responsible to the point of doing a job. And then on the top of that, we give them a raise.
And, you know, it's just like school, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it's just like school where we still promote the kids right up, even if they don't pass the tests, because, you know, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
I'm not sorry to interject, but
please do. I mean,
we're running short of time, Brian. Hang on, Brian. Thank you so much for the call. Your blog is thegorillaatemyluggage.blogspot.com. Is it all right when we post the show if we link to it?
Please do.
I'm going to look at that one myself, too.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us. We have to Tracy back as well. And, you know, the way this hour is flying, I'm not even sure that we're going to get to the rest of my questions, but we definitely want to get her back on because she got cut off. DeTracy, are you there?
Yes, I think I am.
Can you stay with us this time?
Hi, Tracy.
I'm going to try.
Now,
I used to
have
my left lost, but I'd rather not get lost from the radio, too.
I understand that you actually are something of an authority. You write about how to pack.
Yes, I do. I write on Travel to Greece for About.com, and I'm afraid that I'm actually hoping that Dr. Williams, I realize he's not a medical doctor, but I'm still hoping he might help cure me. I think I'm one of the biggest luggage hypocrites that are on the planet right now, because I advocate packing very lightly, and then I almost always completely fail to do so myself. So I don't know if this can help me, Dr. Williams, but I'm hoping so.
Okay.
Well, go ahead.
Now, am I asking to be able to help you out on? And I think what I call that is do what I say, not what I do, type of a management style.
Have
you heard that one? Now that's been around for about 1,000 years, right?
Yeah.
And my mother used to tell me, say, well, I'm doing this because I love you. I said, but I also love you. Don't you love yourself? And I love you, and I want you to be around to see my grandkids and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I would like for you to just lead by example. Show me how to do it, and I see that every day. Then I will go ahead and do it. But the human cable system, my book is Who Do You See in the Mirror? And it has the human cable system, and you have never heard of that in your life because I am the developer of it. And that one there will cure, I think, is a structure to help you cure, because you have to actually make the decision once you go through the structure. And if you're not on board with wanting to cure yourself and sound like you are, then the human cable system will certainly provide you the structure to do that. And again, it was my first reader of the book. And let me give you what that person wrote. And it was from a very conservative group. They said that this book is so profoundly accurate that it ought to be mandatory reading for all high school students, all college students, everyone in the workplace, from the file cabinet to person who's filing to the CEO, and anybody who is inspiring to go in public office ought to be mandatory that they read this book. So that was a pretty good, a review after they were able to read the human cable system. So the human cable system seemed to be exciting a lot of people. And soon I'll be going around across the United States and offering a workshop in that very thing.
This is a perfect example, which is, you know, what does this say about, you know, about, now I certainly am not asking you to diagnose DeTracy with her as having perhaps Luggagosis Hippocratis or such, but, you know, what does, in general, in terms of your view of human behavior and your behavioral science background, someone who takes everything with them on a trip, like just way overpacks the kitchen sink, okay, Everything's in there. You know, what does that say about them?
Okay.
I do want to say in my defense,
go ahead,
people ask for aspirin, that extra sweater, the book to read that they forgot to bring. So there's some benefits to my condition. It's just that I hate advocating it and then finding myself incapable of living up to my own advice.
well, normally, you know, when you have a situation where, you know, they try to take quite a bit when they're going on the trip, they're coming out of a comfort zone. Other than if you're in the comforts of your home, you can probably it could be a person who changed three times a day. Okay, but then if you take you out of that comfort zone, what happens is that some of that comfort zone spills over into the packet, and you begin to say, you know, I'm used to it and I'm conditioned to it, and even though I'm going to go from city A to city B, I still want to have that comfort zone of being able to, you know, change three times a day. And that is not realistic if you're traveling. You want to do two things. You want to reduce that, you know, that amount that you're taking, and take nothing but the essential things that you need in order to take the trip. Unless she's going for a month or two, something like that, maybe then you can maybe take a little bit more. But you always, because it reduces the stress. Because number one, you have to come back. When you come back, you got to think about all those things you put on, you know, in your bag when you went there. You got to see whether or not you brought them all back. And how many times have we seen people? Oh, by the way, I had to call back and say, oh, I left this there and I left this there, and would you ship this? You know, that type of stuff. So you know, you really have to kind of begin to look at the difference between, again, those five elements I told you. You know, your attitude toward packing and the consequence and connect all those things to make some really good, responsible decisions. And think about the three S's I said. Think small when you travel, and that is taking carry-on bags, and think smart, which means that the fees are here to stay. So with this economic condition that we got, you're going to want to pick airlines that don't charge for the first bag, and some airlines, there's at least one airline that don't charge for the second bag. Okay, which is Southwest. You know, but JetBlue don't charge for
trip.
Mm-hmm. Big point.
I'm a big fan of Southwest for my domestic trips because they don't charge.
Absolutely. And that's when you want to...
Unfortunately, that enables me, so...
Yeah, it's probably pretty hard to get to Greece by Southwest.
Yes, it is, but I keep hoping. But actually, on international travel, you usually do have an allowance, which is a little bit more generous, and I do take advantage of it. And often I am on the road for, you know, even 5 or 6 weeks at a stretch. And but my is I also tend to accumulate an extra bag often when I'm traveling, and I actually will buy a bag where I've gone to, and, you know, that'll bring home all my goodies and my little Greek ceramics and all those souvenirs that even after 20 trips to Greece, I can't seem to give up. So I may be a hopeless case.
With your travel, then, if you travel that much, you should be an elite. Classification and all that. And are you aware that they don't charge for bags once you reach that elite status? That's free.
I'm not so much worried about the charges as I am just the sheer bulk. And I have to confess on certain things that I do a lot of kayaking in Greece, and adventure travel has a attitude toward baggage. And I've actually been reduced to hiding my baggage from the people I travel with. And I've gotten quite good at it.
Tracy, we have to go, but quickly, can you tell us where we can find your writing? And also, has anyone who's taken your advice on packing light ever complained to you that it didn't work for them?
No, I had one vicious letter from a man who said that I'd referred to sweaters and that no self-respecting man would wear a sweater. He'd wear a hoodie. And I said, okay. you can read my advice and perhaps even take it at gogreece.about.com. I'm the Greece travel writer at about.com. And I'd love to hear from you. If you want to scold me about my packing tips, I'm ready to take it. I'm ready.
I want to ask one question to her.
Do
you do bundle packing? Bundle packing?
Yes, do you mean like squish it into the plastic bags and squeeze out all the air?
Yeah, that type of stuff. And then, you know, you want to wrap it around and then put a core, the core stuff in the center, and they call that, you know, bundle packing. And what it does is just, you know, keep the creases and the wrinkles all out. So,
definitely,
but you can go on, all you got to do is put bundle packing on Google, and it'll come up and tell you how to do that.
That's bundle packing, and we're going to read about all about how to pack light and even lighter at your site. And is it okay if we post a link to that site, Tracy?
Absolutely. I'd love it. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us and also for calling back. You know what, Dr. Williams, we have just plumb run out of time, which
I understand that. And let me just give you my website so I can give the readers that. www.drjawcsms.com. And I also just released my ebook just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and right now it is the third highest rated ebook, and it's only been out there for 3 weeks. So
that's
I'm
awesome.
Looking that to be pretty, you know, pretty. I'm thinking of great things are going to happen to that book.
And we certainly hope so, because you certainly deserve it. It's, and that website again is www.dr for doctor, JAW for Joseph A. Williams, CSMS for Common Sense Management Strategies. It's drjawcsms.com. We will have a link to that up on our site. And Dr. Williams, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you again also for being so patient at the top of the show.
Oh, I thank you, because I enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, maybe we can have you back and we can talk a bit more about behavioral science. Have a wonderful week.
Do.
Thank you, Dr. Williams.
Okay, same you. Bye.
Be sure to join us next week when our guest is Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, star of Animal Planet Emergency Vets and eVets. And he'll be talking about all kinds of things having to do with holiday safety for your pets, poisonous Christmas plants, hypothermia and frostbite, food poisoning, new household poisons that are introduced for the holidays, holiday-related behavior problems. There's just no end to the things that can just be a menace to your pet during the holidays. So you definitely will want to tune in and find out how you can keep your pet very safe from the star of Emergency Vet. That's Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald next week. Thank you so much for joining us on Monday Night Radio, and have a great week.